everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the
Geek
Buddies. We're back at it again for another week of geeky goodness, getting into a bunch of trailers, getting into some AMC drama, some Hogwarts Legacy drama, and talking the first reactions to Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and what it means for Phase 5. So strap in, y'all. We got a lot to jump into. Let's introduce ourselves. I'm the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, where you can see some of our current work on Netflix right now with Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City, Season 2 and Season 1. Also on YouTube. A lot of places you can see it. A lot of stuff you can watch.
Apparently, also, you can even see it if you go see Knock at the Cabin.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah.
So I went to go see Knock at the Cabin yesterday, okay. which you know, we'll chat later, John. I liked a lot of it.
All right, go ahead.
Yes. I liked a lot of it. But at one point in the background, you know, they have a cartoon, an animated program playing on a flat screen TV. That animated program is Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City, Season 1. I wasn't in a crowded theater. So I took my phone out and I texted Fogel. I'm like, dude, you are never going to believe this, but I'm at Knock at the Cabin, Strawberry Shortcake, the oven episode is playing in the background.
They didn't tell anybody. I got an email from our director and he was like, did you know this? And I was like, I didn't know this. And then we talked to our executive and she's like, wait, what? And then we emailed people at WildBrain and they were like, oh yeah, they called us and they wanted to license some Strawberry Shortcake. And I was like, well, that would have been good to know. So yeah, Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City. Part of the Shyamalan-verse, so there you go.
Son of a bitch! That's awesome. I didn't even register that as I was watching it. I thought it was an old cartoon, and then the Proud Family came on later on in the movie as well. So I was like, "Oh wow! Oh, so that's awesome! All right, congratulations! This is good." Good stuff there. Nice synergy. But yeah, we're going to get into so many things here. Just want to remind you all that how the show works for those of you who are new. And for those who've been with us, thank you so much. We each tackle a geek news item, take a break, and jump into our main topic. And our main topic will be the Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania reactions in Phase 5 conversation. And before we get started, big shout out to Carbon Health, who continues to power and sponsor us into 2023. I've got some new talking points that I need to bring up here. From my friend, I don't even know if I can find it. But anyway, there's 100-plus locations all over the place in the United States, 80-plus locations in California alone. So there's so much going on here. Here we go. You may know Carbon Health for its 120-plus locations that handle urgent care, COVID, RSV, and flu testing and vaccinations. Well, what people should be looking into is how they're expanding into primary care services that include connected health. That's right. What is connected health? It's the idea that our health isn't just about our bodies, but also our minds. So Carbon Health's providers come connected with mental health specialists as well. That's awesome. Carbon Health will be expanding these primary care services further into 2023. And if you're in Massachusetts, you'll be able to access the connected care next month, since it's now expanded from California to Massachusetts. So don't sleep on those primary care services. There you go. Nice little plug for Carbon Health. All right, I guess I start off here. So let's get it going. The big news dropped a couple of days ago here with AMC. It had to come from AMC Theaters. There was a lot of drama that was surrounding this story here. AMC Theaters announcing this new initiative called the Sightline Initiative, which changes ticket pricing in the theater in the same screening you're at based on where the seat is located within the auditorium. Quite a few people had an issue with it. Over the last couple of days, Elijah Wood's comments have been highlighted here. He condemned it. He said the movie theater is and always has been a sacred democratic space for all. This new initiative by AMC Theaters would essentially penalize people for lower income and reward for higher income. I also tweeted about it and it was picked up by Reddit. It was very kind of them, but essentially saying the same thing. This felt like what in essence is deciding that those of you who can afford it will sit in the higher seats, or in the better seats rather, and those of you who can't, you'll sit in the lower seats, essentially turning us all back into Shakespeare days and the Groundlings and all of that nonsense here. It's offering three different seat pricing options. Just give you a little background. Standard Sightline, which are seats that are most common in auditoriums and are available for the traditional cost for a ticket. Value Sightline, which is seats in the front row of the auditorium and are available at a lower price. and preferred sightline, which are seats in the middle of the auditorium and are priced at premium to standard sightline seats. AMC Stubs A-list members will be able to reserve seats in the preferred sightline section at no additional cost. And the value sightline pricing is only available to AMC Stubs members, including the free tier membership. And this is going into effect this Friday. So this is kind of crazy. And there was a lot of strong reactions. Gentlemen, what do you think about this?
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's dumb.
Go ahead. Yes.
I think it's dumb, but okay. I want to be like, so if you have AMC Stubs, everything is the same.
Yeah, you're good. Apparently you're still good if you have AMC Stubs for now, I guess.
So AMC Stubs, everything's the same. Like, you get seats wherever you want. Mm-hmm. If you don't have AMC Stubs, how much more is the premium seat and how much less is the value seat?
It's $1 to $2 more, depending on where you're going to be sitting. And then I imagine it's $1 to $2 less, depending on where you're going to be sitting in the front area. And, of course, $1 to $2 more in the middle area is what I've got here.
So I guess here's what I think as far as the drama surrounding it.
Yeah.
Do I think it's dumb? Sure. I think it's dumb. I think we pay the same. Like, and I think as John said in his tweet, it was a really good point. When you go to see IMAX screen, when you go to see a theater that has like the super comfy seats and you're paying more for that experience, totally get it. But when you're going into a theater and all the seats are the same, it's kind of like, this is dumb. I don't think this is going to last. We'll see how it goes. On the other side of things, as far as epic drama and the haves and the have-nots, and we're putting the poor people in the front row, when we're talking about a $1 to $2 difference, I don't think this is the thing that's going to break apart the class structure of America. So I think we can... Is it stupid? 100% it's stupid. Uh-huh. Is this the new class war? Let them eat cake. Let them sit in the valued seats. Like, this is... I don't know that this is the thing that is going to, bring the common man up and the working man will rise because he had to sit in that front row seat in the AMC theater and stare up Nicole Kidman's nose. Like, I don't think that this is the thing, but I do think that it is stupid.
You know, when they came for my tickets, I didn't say anything. You know, the concern I have, and Shannon, please, your thoughts on this is how it starts, though. And then it's like, well, you get the premium popcorn. You get the Glengarry leads. You get the premium popcorn in the middle section. But in the lower section, you get the popcorn that's been sitting there cold in the bin. You in the half section, you get the kind of warm popcorn. Not the hot popcorn, the warm. And then you get the stale candy. I mean, is this the beginning of the end? Although Michael is not thinking it is. Shannon, what are your thoughts on this?
Johnny, I am more inclined. Now, I am not as adamant as you are, but I am more inclined to agree with you here, because to me, this is like when airlines started charging for bags. This is the nickel and diming that I think this is not the way to get people back into the theater. Like, you used to fly on a plane and you got your meal. It's probably not a great meal, but you got a meal. You got to fly with your bag. Now they charge you for a bag. Some airlines even charge you for a carry-on bag. They don't, you know, you might get some pretzels. You might get a drink. It's this petty, shitty nickel and diming, trying to get anything, you know, any little thing more. And also, I do think this is going to blow up in their face, because it's like, how do you police this? Do you think the 19-year-old is going to go in and ask everyone in the middle section, let me see your ticket? I don't think this can be policed. It's just the silliest, dumbest
thing. Wait a minute.
If you have a situation where the theater is sold out, absolutely.
You can
police it. But if you have someone going in, a 2 o'clock matinee, and there's 12 people in the theater, is someone really going to go in and be like, hey, let me see your ticket? I mean, it's just kind of dumb to me. Like, do I think it's the beginnings of class warfare? No. But I do think it's a really kind of stupid decision to make. I think the idea when they were talking about it, like charging more for like a Marvel film or a Star Wars film, I thought that had more of a realistic leg to stand on.
Yeah, that has more merit.
Than this, because this is just this is just ridiculous. And honestly, I mean, I didn't read the specifics. I mean, when John read them, that's the first time I was hearing of it. I'm like, okay, if the base price is when you start in the bottom and you go up, I mean, if you have a family, of six, if it's two extra dollars, that's an extra $12 that would have bought, you know, a popcorn. I think it's the beginning that I hope that the outcry from everyone does blow up in their face, and I hope they nip it in the bud, because that's stupid.
I mean, I do think Shannon is right in that this doesn't get people back in theaters. I mean, as theaters are sort of trying to figure out what they can do to keep profits up, to keep money up, like, this doesn't get people back in theaters, because when we can watch most movies that are in theaters in a matter of weeks, you know, to Shannon's point, you reach a point where you do the math, it's actually cheaper for you to rent it for $25 on Apple Plus 3 weeks later than it is to get those extra tickets. So I do agree that when you start getting into people's feelings about it, I think this is not going to make people love movie theaters the way Nicole Kidman wants us to at the beginning of every AMC movie. Like, I don't think that this is going to do it. But, you know, I mean, like, I think, and again, it gets into how you feel about nickel and diming. Like, I think that nickel and diming is stupid, but also at the end of the day, like, if I pay another $5 here, another $3 here, I'm fortunate and privileged enough that I'm like, that's annoying, but I don't care.
Right.
What I care about is when you, what I care about is more like price gouging, which is why I was really curious. Like, if it was like a $10 difference, a $15 difference. You know, recently, not so recently, but a few months back when I went to Florida and went to Universal Studios, and I bought my park hopper pass to go to both parks. And then I was like, oh, I'll get a front of line pass. And the front of line pass cost more than the price of admission to the park.
Wow.
That's where I get like, okay, wait a minute. Now that is actually like taking advantage of, and again, I could afford it, but when you start going, a family of four goes to Universal, buys two park hopper tickets, and then has to spend more than the price of admission to do the front of line stuff, that's where I start to get really mad. So I think, again, no argument for me. Like, I don't think, oh, AMC really cracked the code on this one. Like, I think it's really stupid. And I agree with Shannon that it's going to blow up in their face. But I...
And that front of the line pass that was more than the cost of admission did not include the two newest attractions at the Universal Park. So it was kind of crappy. But, you know, that's, I think that the theme park example is that that's a good place to start, because, you know, the three of us, you know, we're, you know, we've done well. So if we want to go to a theme park and spend a little bit extra money, like at Disney, they have the Genie Plus, and, you know, you pay a little bit extra, and you know, for that fast pass, the lightning lane, whatever it is, the three of us can do that. And it's kind of like, that's kind of dumb. But on the other hand, I'm like, oh, great. I'm glad I don't have to wait in line. When you factor in that you have families of, you know, five, six parents that save up all year to take their kids on this vacation.
Yeah.
And then once they get there, you see how much that these, you know, these companies kind of do gouge them. And, you know, they end up spending way more money than what they're expecting. They're probably not going to get the experience they want because of all this extra money they're having to shell out. I just think it's, the whole thing is just kind of super shitty. And it seems like this is where, if people don't cause a stink with AMC, this is the direction that it will keep going.
Yeah, and it's no surprise that they launched this and they're already going to implement it within the week. Like, this news dropped on Monday and it's already going into effect on Friday. That's on purpose. That's on purpose to try to keep you off balance and take advantage of the situation, try to slide it by you. But more and more people are coming out against this, and Elijah Wood being the one that people are focusing on, these sites rather, are focusing on the most. And here's some extra part of this. New prices will not affect showings before 4 p.m., or tickets sold at a special discount on Tuesdays. That's what AMC said. And they defended it. Chief Marketing Officer and Executive Vice President Elliot Hamlisch said that this is more closely aligned with the, quote, reserve seats and pricing models of other types of ticketed events like concerts and sporting events, and people would be more in control over their experience. So this is, I understand why they're doing it, but this is how it starts. It never starts big. It starts with the little things, a dollar here, $2 here. It's a little bit extra. It's a little bit extra this. You want to use a bathroom? It's a dollar. You want to, these are these little things that they start to implement.
And again, I'm not defending, but using that, I mean, like, it is, they aren't wrong that I go to buy tickets at the Hollywood Bowl and certain sections I buy are really expensive and those are the better seats.
Right.
And certain sections are over to the side, or you go to a theater On Broadway to see live theater, there's partial viewing seats, there's balcony right. seats versus orchestra seats. So they're not wrong in the fact that the concept of going to a place
right.
and you go and open the tickets and there are different price tickets depending on where you are going to sit
yeah.
is true. I think that that being applied to movie theaters is where people are like, well, wait, this is new. This like, is
that's
not.
That's a static thing. Whereas concerts and those are 3D and real life rather. And so moving around or sitting in a certain section or sitting, it's so you can get a better angle at the thing. And I think with the theater, it's built so that you can see the movie. Now, yes, front row, it sucks to sit there like this, get to the theater early. Those are the things, right? Or get your ticket ahead of time. This is what it is, but it's a static thing. It's not where you can move sure. around and see more behind the stage and stuff. So there's no real added value other than you get to see the movie a bit more clearly. That's about it. But I just think it's a slippery slope. But I see what you're saying, Mike. Their logic is defensible. It's just that the implementation I think is going to be dangerous.
There was a time when people thought making movie theaters assigned seating was stupid.
Yes, agreed. True.
People as someone who had to wait more than my fair share, getting to theaters at like 9 p.m. for the midnight show so that we could be sitting in the front of the theater because we bought 25 tickets. I am more than happy to have assigned seating now. So again, it'll be interesting to see because I'm not really defending this, although I'm just trying to be as fair as possible to it because there are so many times in history where something like this happens. Oh, we tweaked prices here. We did this. I mean, look, it used to be $6 to go see a movie and now it's like, it's $25 a ticket. So like things change. And it will be interesting to see if people embrace it or not. I think the main thing, and I think Shannon really hit on it, is at a point in time where theaters are struggling because of COVID, because of entertainment systems at home, because of the window between theatrical release and streaming or home viewing or anything else, I think this is probably not the smartest time to try this one, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think, this isn't our main topic, but I do want to throw in one last point here. You know, I've been saying for years the theater will have, and we've said it on the show, theaters will eventually become like Broadway theaters where you will pay the extra $50 a ticket to see a movie in 20K with the chair moving around. That is absolutely the path we're going on. This is the step towards that, another mini step or big step towards that idea of making you pay extra for having to be in a certain section and see the movie in a certain way. And this is just desperate attempts to try to get the money back. It's somehow, some way to try to make some money off of this situation because I think it's the last gasp. It feels like the last gasp of theaters. As much as people are encouraging people to go like, yes, $1.5 billion for Maverick and all this money for Avatar, those are few and far between. You're not seeing billion-dollar movies every week. So these are the things that I think the theaters are realizing more and more. And this is why studios are trending towards more of these tentpole pictures so that everybody makes money in the whole pipeline system. And not something like The Whale, which is not going to make $1 billion. So I wonder how this is slowly going to affect the kind of content we get in theaters, not the kind of content that gets made. So,
What is Shannon? You can't see if you're listening. What are you giggling about now?
The Whale is not going to make a splash.
God damn it. All right.
Warren, I guess don't let giggling Shannon lie. Like when he's sitting there laughing to himself, don't ask because you know what you're gonna get. He's just sitting there laughing at his own joke that he has yet to say out loud.
Like the scorpion and the frog, you can only blame yourself.
My gosh, I gotta be careful not to take a sip. I'm gonna give myself a spit take.
Let's take a break. We'll jump in after this. Oh boy. All right, Mikey, what do you got for us?
He literally can't sip his drink because he's laughing so hard.
That's right.
At his own joke.
It's a combination. It's also your reactions. Sorry.
All right, Mikey, what do we got?
Well, You thought AMC Theaters was the only one in hot water this week, but that is not the case. Hogwarts Legacy has been released on video game systems around the world, reigniting the ongoing controversy about what to do about J.K. Rowling. So Hogwarts Legacy is out. You can download it if you want. You can refuse to download it if you want.
Yeah.
Some gaming outlets are refusing to review the game.
Yeah.
Some gaming outlets are listing other magical games that you could download instead. Some gaming outlets are reviewing the game and defending their right to review the game. And on Twitter or anywhere on social media, people are in a fight because there are people that really want to play the game and are downloading it, people who really don't want to play the game and refuse to give J.K. Rowling money, and everywhere in between, and everybody is arguing with everybody about the right way to handle this. So, really opens up a big can of worms. Like, this is sort of maybe one of the bigger, more contentious versions of what we sort of struggle with as a society right now. Like, we are pretty divided as a society. Every time, you know, we're filming a movie and somebody is an anti-vaxxer or somebody is pro this or anti that, and we all struggle with, do we support the artist? Do we support the actor? Do we support the cause? And J.K. Rowling and transgender rights and Hogwarts Legacy seem to be the hot button issue of the moment that everyone is sort of trying to navigate. So, gentlemen, dive in. What do you think? How do you slice this one up?
These are one of those things where I've rarely been more conflicted than I am with this situation, because the video game, the trailers, the footage, it looks incredible. It looks phenomenal. And by the way, she had nothing to do with the creation of the video game. Zero. But if you buy it, she will absolutely get a profit from that money. And she has said that she, in response to someone on Twitter about it, I think a year or two ago, talking about the game, she said, who's saying, how can you sleep with these comments that you make? And she said, I look at my checkbook or I look at my bank account and I sleep. I don't lose an ounce or a wink of sleep. And so it's that kind of thing. And a lot of people are correctly pointing out that if you buy the game, the money will go into her pocket to support support transphobic causes and what have you. You know, some of you are going to comment down below and be like, she's not transphobic. Yes, she is. Deal with it. And this kind of stuff is really difficult to navigate because the property used to stand or does stand for a lot of people for inclusion. In fact, there is a trans character in this game, a female trans character in this game. Unfortunately, even that's come under criticism because people are claiming that her voice sounds too manly. She's addressed by sir. But then other people counter that her name is Celtic for rebirth. So what does that mean? So there's even the game itself is touched by controversy in trying to address the controversy by having a trans character. Even the way they went about having a trans character can be read as the incorrect approach. So this is just muddy waters. It is driving me nuts that because I'm trying to figure out if I should buy the game or not. And I support, you know, the trans community. Been very vocal about my support for the trans community. Been an ally, but I also am wondering, like, is buying the game a negative thing? Playing the game a negative thing? And if it is, then I'll make that decision for myself. But it's a conundrum for sure for a number of reasons. Shannon, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, you know, I was a big fan of those books.
Yeah.
When they came out, I super enjoyed them. Not as big a fan of the movies. You know, I do love, you know, the theme park experiences that you know, Harry Potter has created.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I mean, the video game was never a thing for me. Like, I had kind of emotionally separated from the brand. And not just because of her. I mean, I just sort of kind of got over it. Also, the Fantastic Beast movies being what they were. I mean, that was just further. That was just further separation. Like, oh yeah, I don't. If she is the credited writer on this, you know, maybe writing scripts ain't her thing. But you know, you wonder just about the brand, knowing how much it means to people and how financially successful it has been. Like, is it so tainted now that Warner Brothers is just going to cut bait? Like, I don't know how well the game is doing right now. I know I have read online and granted, these are just people tweeting out their opinions. So I don't know that according to some folks on Twitter, that the plot of the game comes off as a bit anti-Semitic.
Yes.
Again, like I don't know the game. I haven't read about it, so I don't know what that is in reference to in the past. I mean, there have been comparisons with, especially with the goblin characters, that they come off, you know, looking at them now, kind of with clear eyes, like, oh my God, these are so anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it was a game that I never had any interest in. I did read someone's theory that if you want to play this game that badly, buy it secondhand. So she does not get that money. Like if you feel this strongly, but you also want to play the game, this is a way to do it. So yeah, man. I mean, I'm more curious about what's going to happen with this once beloved franchise because of comments that the creator has made.
Yeah, according to this Hogwarts Legacy, the pre-orders topped the Steam charts. This is like 3 days ago from VGCharts.com. So they were saying that it is absolutely one of the highest games in demand. It is one of the top sellers by revenue. Just the pre-order revenue put it already at number one, right above Steam Deck and Dead Space. And the two versions, because there are two versions of the game. One of the versions is at number one. One of the versions is at number four for the sales. So clearly it didn't affect the sales for it that deeply. And you wonder how many people are really plugged in to this controversy and want to be necessarily activists with their money. Is it just all of us in the bubble and a majority of people could care less and don't want to spend time thinking about it? That's another part of this that that is, you know, has to be weighed overall when you're looking at this issue, Mike.
Yeah, I feel bad for the game designers. Yeah, yeah. Because by all accounts, the reviews that have come out that actually review the game say it's pretty good. Content aside, controversy aside, that as far as like giving you that Harry Potter experience, that they did a good job. And they have this trans character. Again, controversy aside, whether they did it exactly right, when you log into the game and you get to create your character, you are allowed to have, you can assign your male character a female voice, your female character a male voice. Yep. Like they have gone out of their way to create an adventure in the Harry Potter universe without J.K. Rowling's influence that is as inclusive as it could possibly be, and arguably as inclusive as a lot of other really great games out there that we say, oh, this is a great example of inclusivity, and J.K. Rowling is still fucking it up. I think J.K. Rowling is gonna, you know, she's always gonna be rich. It is. Yeah. She's going to be rich. She gave us Harry Potter. We all love those books. She's going to be rich no matter what she does, no matter what we do for the rest of her life. Whether that's good or bad or indifferent, like that's just the facts of the matter. So the idea of trying to hit her where it hurts in her pocketbook, as much as I think that everyone has the right to make that decision for themselves, the reality is, we're not hitting her in her pocketbook. She's beyond wealthy enough that's nothing that we do or anybody does is really going to matter. Like if Warner Brothers dumped her tomorrow and somehow stole Harry Potter away from her or packed up all their Harry Potter stuff, handed it to her and said, thanks, we're out. She's still going to have more money than most of us ever see in our lifetime. So it is what it is. As much as that kind of sucks in a lot of ways, it's just true. So I think for me, everyone needs to do what they think is the right thing to do. Like if you really can't stand supporting her, do not play the game. If Harry Potter meant a lot to you and you grew up loving it and you really want to check the game out, check the game out. As yep. Shannon said, you can buy it secondhand. I know lots of people who do still enjoy Harry Potter, who anytime they buy a Harry Potter thing, they give an equal or greater amount to a trans charity.
That's great.
I mean, there's a thousand different ways to do this. And I think the bottom line, and I think the one thing that does sort of bother me in all of this is our love for content. I mean, all we do on Geek Buddies is talk about the Star Wars universe, the Harry Potter universe, the DC universe, the Marvel universe, all the you know, all these universes that we love. If your love for a universe is great, like it's complicated right now. I think J.K. Rowling is making it hard to love her universe. I know a lot of people, myself included, that find it harder to enjoy Harry Potter now. Like, I used to love it. I used to love going to Universal. I used to love the rides. I used to love getting my butterbeer. And now the experience is a little bit tainted. Anytime I'm kind of interacting with Harry Potter on any level, whether it's watching the movies or, you know, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway or whatever it is, there's just a part of me that doesn't love it as much.
Yeah.
And part of that is J.K. Rowling's comments about the trans community. Part of it, as Shannon said, is looking at what she wrote with fresh eyes and realizing that some of it is a little bit dicey. The goblins at Gringotts being one specific example. Right. And part of it is the Fantastic Beasts franchise and how she just royally fucked that up. Mm-hmm. So I think that the best thing for Harry Potter is going to be when J.K. Rowling is gone.
Yeah.
Because I think that this is an expansive world, and I think it's a world that has a lot of merit, and I think it's a world that has meant a lot to a lot of people. And I think that once she is gone and not making comments, and other people can be the stewards of this universe and take it to new places, just like Avalanche Games is trying to do by making it inclusive and putting trans characters there, I think that's going to be the best thing for this universe. And until then, it's going to be something that we're all going to struggle with. But I think what I would say to everybody who's listening to this, because as John said, I know some of you people are like, J.K. Rowling's not transphobic. Some people are like, I can't stand J.K. Rowling. She's the worst thing in the world. If you have friends who play Harry Potter, it doesn't mean that they're transphobic. And if you are just sitting there refusing to buy Harry Potter, it doesn't automatically make you an ally. There's a lot of other things you can do for the trans community that are going to make you way more of an ally than whether or not you cast some spells on your PS5. So I think, you know, I think it's a really personal decision for everybody. But I think at the end of the day, vilifying the people who are playing the game or who are not playing the game is not the way that any of us are going to further trans rights or be more connected as a society of geeks.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, having worked at The Land, it always comes back to those moments inside the room when people lit up. You know, those are my personal experiences. I have a completely different experience than you two in the Harry Potter world, because I never read the books, and but I found the magic in the movies. And then being a part of that for almost 2 years at Universal Studios in Hollywood, the experiences I had in those rooms, I'm never going to be able to replicate in any other format. And I know how special this is. So this is what I struggle with, because I would love to go back and replug into that, and the game would be a way to do that. And I think I'm going to have to make a decision about that. And I think Shannon make an excellent point that buying it secondhand might be the way to go, because, you know, GameStop has that within the week, people selling their copies back, and you can do that there at GameStop. So that may be the path. But Michael, you bring up an excellent point. If you're going to buy the game, counter it by contributing to another charity, if that's something that's really important to you. That's a way to do that and kind of maybe balance out the scales a little bit in life. And she does not have the wherewithal that Lucas did to sell Star Wars, so she is going to hold on to that when, you know.
Oh, we are going to have to pry that sorting hat out of her cold, dead fingers. Like, she is not letting this go.
Ever.
Ever. So that is going to be, it's going to be a while before we can have a Harry Potter universe that is rollingless. But as a lot of people, I mean, and I would say also, like, if you did love Harry Potter and you find yourself in a position where you've sort of soured on the universe a little bit, as I said, there are lists out there right now for other games that you can download that have magic and mystery and cool creatures in them. And there are amazing franchises out there in YA novels and fantasy novels that you can dive into as well. So that is the other thing you can do, is rather than what you choose to not spend your money on, it's also putting your money towards the next big franchise. Like, you know, let Warner Brothers license the next big awesome thing and have that be a huge hit while J.K. Rowling is, you know, burying Harry Potter into the ground with her shitty Fantastic Beasts movies. Like, let's all find other things that we can get excited about as well.
Yeah, and Jedi Survivor is right around the corner. So,
yep.
The 9 minutes will drop, which look awesome. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll jump into our next topic here. Jump into some trailers with Shannon McClung right after this.
As long as AMC doesn't do that stupid plan. All right, so we got trailers. The first one is actually the second look we're getting at Mel Brooks's History of the World Part 2. So this is going to be an 8-episode series on Hulu over 4 nights and an incredibly stacked cast. I mean, you've got Wanda Sykes, you've got Ike Barinholtz, you've got Johnny Knoxville, you got Taika Waititi. I mean, there are just so many people, so many really, really funny people in this. One who is a friend of ours, Mrs. Saryu Blue, who pops up very quickly in the Kumail Nanjiani segment. But, you know, this, I think this is giving us more of what we are expecting. Will it knock it out of the park? We'll find out. But gentlemen, what did you think of our second look at History of the World Part 2?
Yeah, Mikey, what'd you think?
I love Mel Brooks. I grew up loving Mel Brooks.
So here we go.
I think Young Frankenstein is great. I think Blazing Saddles is great. Love Spaceballs. Mel Brooks' humor now is like your drunk uncle at Passover. Like, you love him. And you laugh at his jokes.
Sure.
But you don't know that his jokes are still that funny in this day and age. Like, we'll see. It's a stacked cast. Like, it is a stacked cast. It feels like an event, which is cool. Like just the way that they are promoting it makes it feel like appointment television where I want to check it out and then tweet about it and say, oh, this was funny, that was funny. Just don't know if it's going to actually be funny. Like, that's, like Mel Brooks, like, Men in Tights was like, okay, we're still good. And then after that, you got into like Dracula Dead and Loving It, and you were just like, oh God. And it's like, it's your drunk uncle at Passover. That's my fear. So given the size of the cast and the way that it feels like an event, I don't even know if I'd say hopeful. I am intrigued, but I don't know if it's gonna deliver the goods, guys.
Yeah, I did a trailer reaction for this one earlier today because I missed it yesterday. And here's what I'll say. There are some fun hits. There are a lot of cringe misses. And so this is going to be over 4 nights. So, I mean, I would be worried about a 2-hour movie trying to recapture some of the magic from the original film, let alone 4 nights of trying to recapture the magic from the original film. So that concerns me on so many levels. They're going through 5,000 years of history, but they have some of the greatest comedic talent that we have around today. I mean, look, Taika Waititi's Freudian slip had me on the ground. I'm not going to lie. That was very funny. The Harriet Tubman thing, though, was a little so on the nose, you know, that you're just like, you know, where's this going to work? The Jesus stuff with Quentin Brunson made me laugh.
But
the Alexander Graham Bell stuff did not make me laugh. So it's
just, my gosh. I thought that was so funny.
What?
God. That confirms it. It's my mother.
I can't. God love you. But the Seth Rogen stuff with the pugs, that was cute. Don't tell God. That was funny. So it's going to be a mixed bag for sure. Jack Black dance. I'm no Jack Black fan, but him dancing around singing, I thought was super funny. But the William Shakespeare thing was terrible. And that may be because I just am not a Josh Gad person. So there was just like a balance throughout. So I'm going to watch it because it's coming up in March. It's around the corner. But I'm not going to have any hope that it's going to be great. But if I just get 2 or 3 laughs out of it each night, then I think it'll be okay. We could use some laughter, for God's sakes.
So Josh Gad moment specifically, Johnny.
Okay.
So a few years ago, a musical came out called Something Rotten.
Yes, I remember that one. Yes.
That sketch is literally lifting part of the plot.
No way.
That really did throw me. Like, I wasn't going to bring it up. But like, yeah, when the guy was like, we need a new idea for a thing. He's like, well, what if we did a play where everybody sings and dances their feelings? They're like, that's dumb. And I'm like, that's the entire plot of Something Rotten. Like, that is, how do you miss that one?
I mean, and Something Rotten, John, you would love it. It is so incredibly funny. But I'm not a huge Josh Gad fan either. I think he's probably a lovely person in real life.
Yes, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Yes.
But that coupled with the fact that they are just directly lifting from something that I, you know, got there first and did it better. That I'm kind of like, gosh, I don't know. But Ike Barinholtz as Alexander Graham Bell really has me invested.
Well, you know, this is interesting because John O'Farrell, who was the book writer for Something Rotten, responded to the trailer online, tweeted, said, I know writers can land on the same idea, but our musical ran on Broadway for 2 years, then toured for two more. There's no way that everyone connected with his film was unaware of it. And our premise was, what if they came up with the idea of a musical in Shakespeare's London? In the past, I've had ideas I later realized I'd seen somewhere else. Then you just have to come up with something new. Mel Brooks has given me so much pleasure down the years. I'd be sad if he was now so all-powerful that no one can say to him, Mel, they already did that. Josh Gad responded, of course he did, saying, big fan, all due respect, the trailer is being taken out of context. It's a one-off joke. Nobody breaks out in the song, from what I recall. The trailer cuts to a completely different moment. It's literally that line and off. Something Rotten is brilliant, by the way. So, and Farrell responded with a thank you and to clarify and all of that. So seems like everybody's okay about this, but surely, Mike and Shannon, if we go in there and Josh is wrong about the recollection, we might be in for some lawsuits.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of tweets back and forth that basically come down to good afternoon. He said, it would really be a shame if Mel Gibson did this. Good afternoon. Oh, no, it was a one-off joke. Good afternoon. How dare you, sir? Good afternoon.
Well, also, you just called Mel Brooks Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson. Good afternoon. Whoa.
That's worse. That's worse than Tyka's slip.
Master mate. All right.
So, History of the World Part 2 starts on Hulu March 6th in just a few weeks here.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, that brings us to our next trailer, which how Wes Anderson didn't direct this is shocking to me, but it's called Paint, starring Owen Wilson as a very Bob Ross-like character with a fantastic name, Carl Nargle, who is a public television painter who starts to lose some viewers, and they end up going to the younger, newer thing, who is actually Sierra Renee, who, for all of you Legends of Tomorrow watchers, she was Hot Girl in the CW DC universe.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Again, this is another very comedically stacked cast. We have Stephen Root. We have Wendy McClendon Covey. This looks very funny, very quirky. I imagine it has the potential to, you know, fully go off the rails. But I thought the trailer was funny. Gentlemen, what did you think of our first look at Paint?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was, and I agree with you, Shannon. Until you said it, it didn't even occur to me. This could have been a great Wes Anderson type movie playing on the Bob Ross stuff. And I don't know if you guys have seen the Bob Ross documentary on Netflix. It's fantastic. The most recent one. Yeah. And so it feels like this film has elements of that, because that was something that was going on with Bob Ross at the time. He was kind of not breaking through, and he had started out with someone else, and then he went off on his own. And when he went off on his own is where he became really big. And then there was a lot of drama afterwards about who's really in control of the Bob Ross stuff with his son. So very fascinating stuff here. But they updated it to have, okay, we're going to go with a younger person of color who's a woman. How does a white man, older man who has had some success, react to that? So that's going to be really interesting how they play into that. Not only just younger replacing older, but younger person of color, female replacing older person, older white male in this situation, which a lot of people are kind of, you know, railing against here nowadays. We see on both sides the battle about that. So that's going to be interesting. But overall, just a great vibe, a nice, interesting, pleasant film that's probably going to have some rough moments. And the scene with him handing his sandal to Wendy McClendon and McCovey is just hilarious. So I hope this is one of those small little gems that you go and watch on a Saturday afternoon or on a day off from work on an afternoon, and you just kind of have a pleasant time watching this movie. It's what it feels like to me. And someone commented on the trailer, which I thought was genius, saying, if he doesn't look at one of his paintings and go, wow, we've lost. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. I don't know that it's premium seating for me, but it might be standard seating. I'm going to be honest with you. Owen Wilson playing a Bob Ross type character is just a home run in and of itself to me. And the vibe of the trailer with the calm music while he was kind of unraveling was very, very funny. But also the idea of taking someone as sort of relaxed and chill as Bob Ross and throwing the idea of white, straight male fragility in there as how does he react to something that, like, we talk about this all the time. I mean, you know, I have this, you know, whether it's behind the camera in animation, whether it's acting, whether it's anything, like, a big thing in the industry now is a bunch of people contending with the fact that there are different types of people being looked at for jobs right now, and that might be affecting your job, and you know that it's the right thing, but it's hard for you and you're struggling. Like, these are real things that people are dealing with, and if they can sort of hone in on all that with Owen Wilson as Bob Ross and make it all work, like, it could be pretty brilliant. You know what? I think I sold myself. I'm going premium, guys. I'm going premium. I'm paying the extra $2. I'm in.
Look, just go see it before four. You don't have to pay the price. That's what you want. Yeah. Actually, we'll see, because it comes out April 7th. So at this point, maybe AMC has rolled out that program nationwide. And so this brings us to our last trailer, which, God bless John Rocha for sending this to me, because I had read the headline. I didn't think twice about it. Then I clicked on this trailer. And again, I think this has the potential to be one of those big summer comedies, but this one is called Strays. It is about an abandoned dog who teams up with other strays to get revenge on his former owner, the former owner being Will Forte, the abandoned dog being Will Ferrell, who teams up with some other strays, Jamie Foxx, Isla Fisher, I believe it's from Fresh Off the Boat, Randall Park. It's this group of four dogs who then set out on this revenge plan to bite the former owner's dick off. I was howling, no pun intended, at
for
this
once
trailer.
For once.
Gentlemen, what did you think of our first look at Strays?
Mikey.
Man, when I was growing up, you know, we had Milo and Otis. We had Homeward Bound. You had these, like, heartwarming films with Sally Field and Michael J. Fox, like, giving the voice to dogs and cats as they go on these incredible journeys. And it's, like, just, it's heartwarming and sweet. And seeing that kind of concept placed on this, I was not, like, you know, you, so usually what happens is we're deciding what we're going to review and what we're going to talk about in Geek Buddies, and Shannon will throw some trailers out, or John throws some trailers out, and then I'm like, oh shit, I got to YouTube, I got to watch them. And I was like, what is this? And I started watching, I'm like, oh god, this is going to be dumb. And I also was howling by the end of it. It was really, really funny. And just the entire plot of the movie being like, oh, my owner did abandon me, I'm gonna bite his dick off. And that's the plot. Seems to be, that's the movie. Like, this doesn't seem like the heartwarming movie where he gets to the end and you find out that Will Forte really loved him after all. Like, I think that dick's getting bit off. Like, I think that's where this is going.
My thing is, like, what has that dog seen where he understands that Will Forte's dick is the most important thing to him, so he knows exactly what to go for?
John, you don't have a dog, but I'm going to tell you, when you got a dog in your house,
yeah,
and they're watching you at all times.
Oh boy,
that was a leap that I did not have to make.
Oh my. Yeah, I mean, this is. I mean, I did a reaction to it earlier. As soon as it dropped, I saw. I was like, what the? I didn't even know about this movie, right? I was sitting in front of my computer working on other things. And all of a sudden, this email came in. Oh, this trailer has dropped. And I'm like, Strays? What the hell, Strays? I don't know. It's probably a dog movie, whatever. And I clicked on it, and it was Will Ferrell and Jimmy Fox. I'm like, well, let me see. And then when I read the synopsis, I'm like, I got to react to this. Even if it's terrible, I got to react to this. And I had no idea it was going to be this funny. And I did the Red Band trailer because I liked it. Let's see what I'm really going to get when I walk in the movie theater. It was genius. Absolutely.
I
got to
tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
When that Jamie Fox dog gets drunk and sees his reflection in the mirror and gets in a fight with himself, I was, that got me.
But he's criticizing Reggie, who's right next to him, even though he thinks it's another dog that he's criticizing. And I love it. He's like, I don't want this to get violent. The whole thing with the gnome where he's like, yeah, I'm your father. This is very awkward to introduce myself this way. All of those little jokes within, because he's a fish out of water with these harder edge dogs, Randall Park being a therapy dog, that is hilarious. When they eat the shrooms, it's funny as hell. But I'm telling you, the moment that made me lose my shit, and you go watching the reaction, is when that fucking hawk comes in and takes Jamie Foxx's dog. I lost my shit. I didn't see that coming. He's like, what else could go wrong? And he's just gone. And you're like, holy shit. So just showing you that this is going to be fun. And you're right, Mike. This is not Milo and Otis or Homeward Bound.
This is not Milo and Otis, you guys.
But, I mean, I think it does have the potential to have a lot of heart. I mean, that moment where Reggie realizes that, wait, that means Doug doesn't love me. I mean, like, the sincerity that line is delivered, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Let me tell you.
This coming time.
Shannon, the end of this trailer had a puppet dog with human hands because he was on mushrooms. If you're coming to this movie for the heart, you might be in for some disappointment.
All I need is that moment that Will Ferrell already delivered perfectly in the trailer. And this is directed by Josh Greenbaum, who did Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which came out last year, which was a super, super funny film.
That was so funny. I did not think that film was going to be funny, and it was hilarious. You're right.
I mean, again, the alternate reality where COVID didn't happen and Barb and Star got released in the theaters. I mean, you know, I feel like there would be Rocky Horror Picture-like screenings of that movie happening.
You're probably right. Also, in my opinion, the American Vandal writer wrote this film, Dan Perot, and Phil Lord and Chris Miller are producers on this thing.
I will give you Lord and Miller. Yeah. Maybe there's some heart there. I'll give you that. Lord and Miller, they are the masters of, they gave me some heart in both 21 Jump Street movies. So I will give it up to them for that.
And well, we will sorry, go ahead, Johnny.
Oddly, Louis Leterrier is one of the producers on this. So I don't know what that means. So yeah.
The Hawk was his idea.
Yeah, probably. A hawk would be a good idea here.
It swoops down from the air.
Takes the dog.
I think he just became German. But we're all going to get to see Strays June 9th in theaters.
All right, there we go. Well, let's take a quick break. And we'll jump into our main topic here, talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, what we expect for Phase 5.
Low key, Christoph Beck's Ant-Man score from 1 and 2, that's some of the best music in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's a good score. And also they also play the shit out of it at California Adventure.
Oh, do they really?
As part of as part of the whole like Avengers campus sort of music that's kind of strung throughout. It's a little bit Avengers, a little bit Spidey, but a lot of Ant-Man. Like if you're sitting and having a tequila drink and an oversized pretzel at Pim's Cafe, you will hear that music a whole lot. But it's very soothing.
Oversized pretzel. You might have talked me into that.
It's a big.
That's what did it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to the Star Wars land and I've never been to the Avengers land yet, so I gotta find my way to do these things. But I'm always like, oh, a theme park. I don't know if I want to spend my afternoon. If you got an oversized soft pretzel, you know me, Shannon. From our brewery days, that is all you need to get me through the door. So anyway, all right. Ant-Man of the Wasp: Quantumania. The world premiere happened on Monday night. So my colleagues got a chance to go up there in L.A. A lot of fun. Shout out to my co-host Wendy Lee Zaney on the John and Wendy show. She got to be there, and Mark Ellis and Christian Harloff and all those got to be there. But there were some reactions to this one. Of course, this one is Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, and we're getting Jonathan Majors here as Kang. The three of us have talked about the trailers that have been dropped before, and so the reactions coming out of this thing are really interesting. Let me share the screen so we can all read them together, so we're not all just kind of listening to me talk. But here's Courtney Howard, who's a critic that I also respect and admire, saying, after a frustratingly rough Act 1, Ant-Man the Wasp: Quantumania finally gets going, only to end where this story should have began. While the external stakes are clear and weighty, emotional drive felt slight and levity even lighter. That said, Jonathan Majors rules. Up rocks as Mike Ryan said, Ant-Man of the Wasp, Quantumania. Trying to imagine a Marvel novice, one ticket please, then getting 2 hours of variant and multiverse talk. Jonathan Majors is great as Kang and good for a portion of the movie. Michelle Pfeiffer is the main character, which is awesome. They found the perfect actor in Majors for Kang, and we are going to get a lot of Kang coming up, but I'm not sure about the whole You think Thanos was bad, meet Kang strategy. He's fun here, but to be the big bad over multiple projects? Just leaves it hanging in the air, that question. My friend Scott Mendelson here from The Wrap said, my son changed his mind at the last minute and skipped seeing Ant-Man of the Wasp Quantumania tonight. He sadly had the right idea. BuzzFeed writer Nora Dominic said, John the Majors is a force in Ant-Man of the Wasp Quantumania. He's compelling, chilling, and already giving a top-notch performance. I love the complexity he brings to Kang with literally a single look. MCU really won with the casting. And Fandango's Eric Davis said, Phase 5 has begun. The new Ant-Man movie is like a psychedelic roller coaster full of frightening and hilarious oddities, plus one very menacing Kang. Big Star Wars vibes meet the MCU at its freakiest and most inventive. MODOK is a riot, but Jonathan Majors conquers. Love the ride. I really dug how Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is both a part one of Phase 5, but also a self-contained Ant-Man story that's funny and sweet and features a kick-ass Michelle Pfeiffer. I think that's everybody that I wanted to read. Guys, what are your reactions there right off the bat to these kind of mixed reactions or a mixed bag of reactions here? There were some overly positive ones from the standard people who always love every Marvel movie, but it seems like this is a little bit more of the continuation of Phase 4, where not everyone is falling all over themselves to give love to this film. So what are your reactions to these reactions?
Well, I mean, it seems the one universally praised element is Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, correct.
Which, yes. You know, I mean, I feel like his performance in Loki, I really liked it. I hear not everyone was the biggest fan. Like, it was a little broad for some people. But for me, I thought it totally made sense. Like, this is a guy who's essentially been by himself for, you know, possibly millennia, with the exception of, you know, an animated clock that talks. So I'm super excited to see him. Jonathan Majors has never delivered a boring performance, in my opinion.
Yeah.
As far as a couple that I read, it said it didn't really feel like an Ant-Man movie. Like, it was kind of missing that lighter-hearted comedic approach. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I feel like coming off of Phase 4, that was a bit of a mixed bag. I think there are a lot of high expectations for this, as this is supposed to kind of kick the multiversal story for this saga into high gear. So I just want a good movie. going back and, like, you know, reading about, Fantastic Four with Matt Shackman and everything. I remember when WandaVision started phase four and 90% that series got there. And the promise of the continuing Marvel Cinematic Universe. And throughout Phase 4, it had some great moments. Had some lumpy moments as well. So I just want a good, fun movie. Mm-hmm. And so I know a lot of people have said that it takes a second to get going. You can say that with a lot of the Marvel films. So I mean, my fingers are firmly crossed at this point. No one has said it is boring, that it gets a little zany.
That's 100% true.
Yeah. So, I mean, as long as we're given a fun ride, my fingers are crossed, cautiously optimistic.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts on these reactions?
Yeah, I was saying to our buddy Jonathan Gabay last night. He gets mad when I say our buddy, and he knows I'm talking about him, but I don't say his name. So I was talking to our buddy Jonathan Gabay.
He wants buddy credit. Give him.
He's buddy cred.
Yes, go ahead.
I was saying that I was going into this movie, I'm not like stoked the way I was in Phase 3 for Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Phase 4, coming off of Spider-Man No Way Home, I was ready to rock, but between Multiverse of Madness and Thor Love and Thunder, and even though I think Wakanda Forever is a great movie, didn't quite reach the heights that I was hoping. Like, I'm kind of like, I think like a lot of Marvel fans, I'm kind of, the sheen has worn off a little bit. And so I'm not going into Quantumania right now, like, flipping out the way that we were, like, Ragnarok, Guardians, Infinity War, Endgame. Like, you were just, like, we were all crazy in the best possible way. And now I'm kind of like, okay, let's go in and let's see what we get. I don't think that this is going to be a disaster movie. Like, I don't know that it's going to be, oh shit, Marvel's back. I think the two things that I really like are, one, the thing that they absolutely have to get right with this movie, it sounds like they did. Mm-hmm. It sounds like Jonathan Majors is great as Kang. And if there's one thing that needs to definitely work, if Kang is the bones of the rest of this saga, is that Kang has to work. And it sounds like that part, even the people who don't love the movie are like, Jonathan Majors did a really good job. Yeah. Also, you're going to put Michelle Pfeiffer front and center? I'm on board.
Yep.
I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. It doesn't really feel like an Ant-Man movie. Maybe Ant-Man needed more to do, but Michelle Pfeiffer had a ton of screen time. Great. I'm in. Give me Michelle Pfeiffer all day long. I'm also really curious. I've heard from a lot of people that this is like Marvel's Star Wars, that it has definite Star Wars vibes. Like that was in some of the spoiler reviews. I've heard that from other people internally at Marvel. And I'm really curious as to what that means, because we do have space movies. We've got the Guardians, Thor is in space. We've had a lot of space exploration. We've had spaceships, we've had stuff. So I'm curious, what about this Quantum Realm movie? Whether it's like, does Kang have kind of his version of the Empire? Is there a rebellion in the Quantum Realm? Like, I'm really curious what they mean by Star Wars vibes. And I'm sure when we do our spoiler review, we will be talking a ton about that. I feel like this is where things are really kicking off. Phase 4 was kind of Marvel resetting after the Infinity Saga, with mixed results. And as many people have pointed out and brought up and written articles about, Phase 4, it was a lot about grief. It was a lot about recovering from the snap. It was about, everyone dealing with that, whether it was Black Widow or Wanda or Peter Parker or Shuri. There was a lot of crying in Phase 4. There's a lot of dealing with the repercussions of things. And now Phase 5 is kind of feeling like it's kicking off this big, epic, new, like, we're getting Kang for real. We were hinted at, we knew he was coming, but this is where the rubber's meeting the road. So yeah. I feel like we're going to come out and be really mixed on this movie. I feel like this is going to be one where we all three have sort of varying opinions of what worked and what didn't. But I don't think it's going to be, not knocking on wood, I don't think this is going to be like a multiverse of madness where we all kind of come out and go, ugh, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. I feel like there's going to be stuff that we like about this a lot and stuff that we're like, ooh, you didn't quite get there. I would have liked more of this. I think you fucked this up. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, we're about to enter into 24 months of Phase 5. It's going to be real interesting. Or 15 months, I guess, because we're into, maybe 12, 15 months of Phase 5. It's going to be interesting to see how they slam this all together, right? Because you've got Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and the Marvels all coming out this year. Then we get a break from the movies until May of 2024 at this point. Captain America, New World Order, Thunderbolts, and then Blade. Those are all 2024. And when you look at the series, What If Season 2 is coming out, Secret Invasion, Loki, Ironheart, Echo, and Agatha Coven of Chaos at this point are all slated for 2023, which is insane to think about. And then Daredevil Born Again, that 18-episode series will start in early 2024. So that's a lot. I just think it's odd that they used an Ant-Man movie to kick off Phase 5, because Ant-Man has always been the dessert or the after dinner mint or the thing that you go, the decompression point, like, oh my god, yeah, make me laugh, because that is a lot. But to use Ant-Man to launch your big baddie, which is Kang, although you did kind of soft launch him in Loki, but really launch him here, I thought was an interesting decision, a curious decision, because this is a franchise that has been seen as a comedic franchise, a fun franchise, within the overall MCU franchise, of course. So to go this route is interesting. And it sounds, from a number of the people that I do respect as critics and do listen to and mostly agree with most of the time, that this is a bit of a mixed bag, the movie itself. Yeah. So I agree with you, Mikey. I'm going in with like, okay, not high expectations. I just want to see what's here. Will I laugh? Will I enjoy myself? Will I buy the cat? Because Catherine Newton was also getting a lot of love in some of the responses as well. So want to see how she kind of transitions to be the new Cassie. And I want to see what this world is that they're constructing. And if maybe they don't hit all the beats, I think it also kind of exposes Peyton Reed as a guy who's not going to be able to do these really expansive type movies.
Yeah.
He's more of a smaller type approach, and that's okay to have in the MCU, because those are great directors that you need to have to balance things out for the ones that can handle big stuff like the Russo brothers. So,
I mean,
those are my thoughts when I come down to it. It's a little disappointing that not everybody's over the moon, and it feels like we're just continuing phase four into phase five. And look, just because they call it a different phase doesn't mean everybody goes, we're suddenly great again. It's just they're continuing this process. And they've got one last point. Sorry, Mike. One last point is that, and they've got so much now that's involved with Marvel that they have to introduce and connect. And we saw that in Wakanda Forever, where it was creaking a little bit from the weight of all the extra things they had to attach to it. And I wonder if that's also an issue in this Ant-Man film. We shall see. Go ahead, Mike.
But it is. I mean, look, and I was scrolling through Disney Plus the other day. I watched my sister was in town last weekend. She hadn't seen Wakanda Forever, so we ordered takeout. We watched Wakanda Forever. You know, Wakanda Forever is a solid movie. Like yes. Marvel, I think we forget when you go back through phase one, two, and three, I challenge anybody to do this. Go back through your Disney Plus, scroll through all those movies. It's not like the Infinity Saga was 23 Criterion Collection movies.
Banger after banger after
like,
banger.
Like there's stuff in all these movies that you're like, oh, that was a little cheesy. That never quite worked. Didn't love that. But then there's stuff that we love. And I think what we really remember when we think of the Infinity Saga is the Infinity War and Endgame. I mean, Infinity War and Endgame, they 1,000% knocked out of the park. I mean, those movies, they ended with such a bang. And there's gold in there. Like, I think the Captain America movies are almost perfect. I think that the Guardians of the Galaxy was just like this. Like, there's definitely great stuff. But, you know, going back through Phase 4, if you look through it, like, there and Phase 4 had some big disappointments for me. There's a lot to love about Phase 4. Now, whether all of these threads weave together and they stick the landing again when we get to Kang Dynasty and Secret War, that's going to be the real question. Because if we get to Kang Dynasty and Secret War, and all of a sudden Shang-Chi and his sister and the Ten Rings and everything with, you know, Peter Parker kind of starting from scratch and all of these different pieces all come together and they manage to weave it together and tell a tale, we'll look at all of this really differently.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. But I do think that as long as Kang comes out of this as a big bad, they're good. They're still okay. I have heard from a couple people, just as I've been talking about stuff. This isn't about Quantumania at all. But I've heard that even with all the stuff coming out, with Marvel's coming out, with this coming out, internally people are very excited about New World Order. The Cap 4, I think that Cap 4 is something that we should all be looking towards and saying, this could be a big one. Like, I think that's one that people are really, really like. This is where a lot of the threads, at least on the more grounded side of things, with Val and maybe with the Thunderbolts and other stuff, is going to kind of really come together.
So you're saying we have to get through the next...
I didn't say we have to get through.
No, but I mean, another aspect, and Shannon, of course, please chime in, but another aspect of this is, the transitioning to the younger actors, the transitioning to the younger approaches here, it's a bit clunky. It's been a bit clunky. These are less notable, less established, less prestigious actors. And so is that maybe stumbling a little bit out of the gate? Are we going to have the same magic that we have before? Because right now, what is it? Paul Rudd, Hemsworth, I guess Tom Holland. These are the more senior, and sadly losing, of course, Chadwick Boseman and Brie Larson, I guess, are the kind of right veteran, older.
Well,
type
Anthony Mackie.
Oh, and Anthony Mackie, yes, of course. But Anthony Mackie wasn't, he was introduced later in the second Captain America film. He's not the foundational pieces. The foundational pieces are the Avengers. And so, so we've changed.
Aside from Bruce, but I mean, whether it works or not.
Yeah.
They're very intentionally saying, the Avengers did their thing. The Avengers formed, and they avenged, and they saved the entire universe from Thanos. And they took a lot of hits. They lost Natasha. They lost Tony. They basically lost Steve.
Yeah.
You know, Hawkeye's still around doing his thing, but he's, you know, got a hearing aid in. And Bruce is...
And we don't know what condition Jeremy Renner's going to be in after that.
And we don't know what condition Jeremy Renner's going to be in. So this idea of who is going to be the Avengers, who is going to save the world, and with a threat that is arguably bigger than Thanos was... I think is pretty key to the story that they're trying to build. Now, whether they execute it or not, whether we believe it, whether we get excited about this new group. And look, and if you've read Secret War, the newer version that I think this movie is going to be pretty based on, it is about a bunch of different factions. Mm-hmm. Now, in Secret War, like, it's the mutants and it's the Hulks and it's the Thors and it's this. But it's pretty easy to see how you could replace a lot of this with... It's the Young Avengers, it's the Ten Rings, it's the Thunderbolts, it's the, you know, so I think that you can sort of see, and I think, look, it, being a Marvel defender, and again, not saying it's going to work, but being a Marvel defender, part of why Phase 4 might feel a little fractured as we move into Phase 5 is because to get to Secret War, they need a bunch of different groups.
Yeah.
And as you're sort of laying all the seeds for all these different groups coming together... it feels a little clunky. And again, if they weave all those things together by the end, we'll look back on this differently. But to your point about waiting around, you don't want to wait around for a bunch of mediocre movies to get to two really great movies. We want to see some great stuff. So I want, as we get to Phase 5, Quantumania notwithstanding, I'm hoping that we get some more No Way Homes in there.
That's my concern. Now, Shannon, what are your thoughts to wrap this up?
I mean, when you look at Phase 4, if you're comparing Phase 4 is like you're rebuilding year, you're comparing it to Phase 1. Phase 1 had some hits, had some misses. I mean, the first Iron Man, you know, no one will argue that is that movie holds up. Like, that's still a really, really great movie. That first Captain America, it didn't work for everybody. It really worked for me. I would say Iron Man 2, Thor, not my favorite movies, but it closed on the Avengers. And the Avengers was something that we had just never seen before.
Right.
That they were able to take the leads of all these other movies and put them together in one movie in this team up thing that for years, you know, comic fans talked about, like, it's impossible. Too many things have to fall into place for this to work, and somehow it worked. So we left Phase 1 on such a high. You know, and like what Avengers came out in 2012, and then you had a year before Iron Man 3 came out. And like at the time, we all thought Iron Man 3 is going to be amazing. And, you know, for some people it was, some people it wasn't.
What ended Phase 2?
Ant-Man,
yeah.
It was Age of Ultron, which a lot of people were like, yeah, okay. But then you had this you know, palate cleanser of Ant-Man, which at the time had all of these sort of production, well, not production woes, but the woes going into production.
Changing directors,
The fact that Edgar Wright kind of at the 11th hour stepped away, Peyton Reed came in. And I think like everyone was saying, I think at first everyone was saying Guardians was going to be the first Marvel flop. And like, well, no, Ant-Man's going to be the first Marvel flop. And there was never a Marvel flop. I mean, you know, you got through Phase 3. And also Phase 3 had just banger after banger after banger.
True.
And so going in, like theatrically, we just haven't had that. Like we had Black Widow, which I thought was a pretty good movie, but just felt so... like an afterthought. It's like, God, this would have been great after Civil War in Phase 3. We got Shang-Chi, which, you know, everyone really, really liked. Eternals, which is still a pretty polarizing film. Spider-Man, which everyone agreed was great. And then the last few, Doctor Strange didn't deliver. Thor seemed like a pretty big creative misfire. And Wakanda Forever kind of had the insurmountable task of following up that first movie.
Yeah.
So theatrically right now, I think we are so hungry for a good Marvel movie and that if it isn't just an absolute home run, there are people who are going to be disappointed. Yeah. And, you know, you got those early comparisons like, well, it looks like Spy Kids. Like it's you know, it's so green screen and CGI heavy. It's like, well, yeah. They're in a completely fabricated world.
You can't shoot on location in the quantum realm.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, I do understand the sort of malaise that might be happening right now because we've had so much Marvel content and not everything has knocked our socks off like Phase 3. So at this point, I again, that's why for me, I just want a good movie. I just want to go in and have a blast. with these characters that we've had such a good time with before. And if all of the first reactions are to be believed, the fact that we don't get, you know, Michael Pena back, and we don't get, you know, David Dasmalchian back, it's like, ah, oh, you know, are they the foundation of this? No, but they are great. And even in just some sort of limited capacity, like, God, why did you not do that?
Yeah.
But, you know, we will find out when the movie comes out.
Yeah. I mean, Dasmalchian was at the premiere. So I don't know if that, and he took pictures with the cast. So I think he might be in the film, but I know Pena, sadly, is not. And we'll see what role Evangeline Lilly plays and how big her role is, because, of course, the anti-vax stuff has touched her as well, whereas Letitia had a bigger role, obviously, in leading Wakanda Forever. We'll see what role she plays, especially because, Michael, you pointed out, Michelle Pfeiffer taking center stage. That means somebody else got to move off stage. It might be that she takes that kind of leadership role in this movie that maybe Evangeline Lilly might have taken if it hadn't been for some of the comments. Who knows? So who knows?
Because what I've heard, Evangeline Lilly does have a much smaller role in this movie than I think people are expecting. I would caution that I don't think that Marvel was like, she's an anti-vaxxer, let's cut down her role. When the entire movie is, we're going into the quantum realm, and Janet Van Dyne spent the last X number of years in the quantum realm, it just makes sense that she would take on a bigger role. So I don't know that it is let's punish Evangeline Lilly so much as, like, for story reasons, it just makes sense that Janet gets to really shine. Also, it's Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, right. Good point. Real quick, Mike, this just dropped, so we'll get your thoughts. I know we got to wrap up, but real quick. Bob Iger just announced on the Disney earnings call that there will be sequels to Toy Story, Frozen, and Zootopia. What are your initial thoughts? Considering the reaction to Lightyear and even Toy Story 4, what are your thoughts?
A Frozen 3 is great. I really hope Elsa gets a girlfriend. Zootopia 2, I'm super down for that world. Give me more of all of it. Give me more Judy Hopps. Give me more Nick. Like, I'm in. I'm in on all of it. Toy Story, at a certain point, you gotta quit while you're ahead. Like, Toy Story 3 should not have been the best Pixar movie, and I still think it's the best Pixar movie ever made. And after you make the most perfect Toy Story, you shouldn't have made Toy Story 4. You did, and you actually made a really good movie. If you can get another movie out of that that is on par with, like, the Toy Story 4 that they already have, I will be shocked and amazed. So that one makes me nervous. I just don't know. Like, what? We'll see.
Okay, we'll see. Shannon, you want to jump in real quick? Anything?
Frozen, I don't care. Zootopia shocks me that they haven't gotten a sequel yet, because Zootopia was such a good movie. Yeah. I'm in the camp that they shouldn't have made Toy Story 4. Like, did it turn out okay? Yeah, but I would have left well enough alone. So if this is an attempt to close the franchise out on a high, I don't know, man. It seems like the foundations of that one might be buckling, and maybe we should just leave well enough alone.
Well, I agree with Frozen, with Shannon. I don't really need to see that, but, like, I totally respect
y'all. Y'all are mad.
I know. I'm sorry, but Zootopia, 100% agree with Shannon as well. And you, Mike, yeah, love that movie. So a sequel makes all kinds of sense. I am, I guess, the more Toy Story person, ironically, here at the end, because I loved Toy Story 4 and I loved Lightyear. So for me, give me more. Give me more.
I'll give you Toy Story 4, because I really think it's, I mean, I don't know that it's as good as Toy Story 3, but I think Toy Story 4 is a damn good movie. Bo Peep is a great character. What they did with her is great. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Lightyear, I can't ride that train with you. I am, that is value. That is barely value seating for me. Like,
it's value seating for the first act.
Oh, there you
great
go.
Great first act.
Well, there we go. My hard-hearted friends here. All right, well, let's wrap it up here. Thank you all so much for joining us for this kind of extended episode of the Geek Buddies. We appreciate it madly. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's at Geek_Buddies. On Instagram, at @_Geek_Buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's at @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, at @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is at MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is at @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
Here at the Geek Buddies, we want you all to have premium seating. And here is what you can do to make sure that you don't have to go sit in that front row. You can hit that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, check out all the amazing content he's got, leave your comments below. What do you think of these trailers? What do you think of Hogwarts Legacy? What do you think of Quantumania? What do you think of AMC? Let us know all in the comments below. If you are listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave some comments and some stars to help us go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing that you can do is retweet this video, post it on your social, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And of course, big shout out to Carbon Health, who continues to power and sponsor us here into 2023. Go to carbonhealth.com to go get checked out today, or download the app to have a doc in your pocket. They have 120 plus locations all over the country handling urgent care, COVID, RSV, flu testing, and vaccinations. They want to get involved with you to have connected health. It's the idea that our health isn't just about our bodies, but also our minds. So now they are expanding into offering more programs here for mental health. And I know a lot of us go through these mental health issues. And so Carbon Health being there to help you all through it, whether virtually or in person, is an invaluable asset that hopefully a lot of you will take advantage of when you can. Go to visit them at carbonhealth.com or download the app today. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. Be well. And look out for our Bad Batch spoiler review coming up in the next day or so from us here at the
Geek
Buddies.